Kansas Cityan Drew Sims turned 18 just a couple of weeks after the 2016 presidential election. He was really disappointed that he couldn't vote that time around, so he was excited about getting to cast a ballot yesterday. We talked to him about that back in October when he was still doing his research on issues and candidates.
For me, it's like I know that I can make a difference voting in the midterms. And this is like my first big election. I've done one small local election back in May. But this to me is really motivating me because it makes more of a difference.
So the midterms feel big to you?
Yes. And I know for a lot of people, it doesn't feel that big. But I think that's just because a lot of people don't really understand how big the midterms are and how they can drastically change the Senate and the House, and how that can in turn affect how decisions in our government are made.
The midterms are a big deal. And today on KCUR's Central Standard, after all the buildup to Election Day, it is finally time to talk about how it went from what some are calling a blue wave in Kansas to more Republican victories in Missouri, where they've also legalized medical marijuana. So who turned out for this election and what does that have to do with the outcome? Call 816-235-2888 with your stories about voting in Kansas and Missouri. 816-235-2888. What drew you to the polls yesterday? How are you feeling about it today? Invigorated? Concerned? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, joined now by Beth Vonamy of UMKC's Political Science Department. She studies voter psychology. Hi, Beth.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Patrick Miller. He's with us from the Poli-Sci Department at KU. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Okay, so there is a ton to talk about. And I have very specific questions, but also I'd like to get some initial reactions to what happened in Kansas and Missouri last night before we dive in. New trends that interest you, questions you've come away with, Patrick?
Well, there's a lot to unpack, obviously, but I think to me, something that I looked at this morning that I find the most interesting is actually the turnout and the boost in turnout, particularly in urban to suburban Kansas, in places like Johnson County, Douglas County, Shawnee County, and how that really did contribute, I think, quite strongly to Laura Kelly's win. I mean, a larger win than I think people thought she would have had if she were going to win.
Who was staying home before but showed up this time? Do we know?
We don't know yet. I mean, there is some evidence that young voters especially were turning out in higher numbers, suburbanites generally, minority voters to an extent. But I think what we saw nationally and in Kansas is that Democrats were just more motivated to vote. You know, we didn't see a strong fall off in turnout in rural Kansas. That was pretty flat. But it really was urban to suburban Kansas showing up far more than they did 4 years ago that I think made yesterday happen for Kelly.
Beth, what about you? Just you're really like gut level, like this is the thing we should be talking about right now.
Women. It's sort of in a word. But I think, you know, we're seeing a huge class of new women in Congress. But I think one thing that hasn't been discussed as much as I think it should be is that the gender gap between men and women has grown, and it's grown incredibly
as voters.
And so, you know, the women are siding with the Democratic Party at a much larger extent than we saw in 2016. And it's not just non-white women, it's also white women are starting to move that direction as well. And I think that's part of what you're seeing on the Kansas side for Laura Kelly and for Sherrese Davids is this sort of move and solidification of women in the Democratic Party.
Well, so we've heard about in Kansas and nationally, suburban to urban voters turning out in higher numbers, seeing a boost at the polls. What are some of the other demographic groups that showed up who maybe haven't in such high numbers in previous elections? Again, I guess we're still waiting for those numbers locally, but what about nationally? And what conclusions might we draw locally?
Well, I mean, generally in midterms, you see that the party that is not the president's party is more enthusiastic to vote. From the initial data we have, it looks like for Democrats, it was driven by suburban voters, especially, and young voters to some extent, more minority voters, depending on where you are. But, to Beth's point about emerging divides between the parties, you know, the parties are always changing. And one of the biggest divides opening up is the education divide amongst whites. With college-educated whites getting more Democratic, non-college whites getting more Republican, whereas that divide didn't really exist 20 years ago. And because college-educated whites cluster in suburbia, they're shoving suburbia to being more Democratic-friendly. I mean, look at the large wins that Kelly and Sharice Davids had in Johnson County yesterday.
This is very interesting to me, though, because on this station, we've reported a lot on the changing demographics of the suburbs. And it seems to me that suburb is often used as code for white affluent. But is that still how you would characterize the suburbs in our area as far as, like, who is actually living there and voting there?
Well, it depends on the suburb. But, you know, Johnson County is better educated, wealthier than average. Some aren't. But, you know, if you look at, so Pew has some great recent data. Both rural America and suburban America are getting more college educated, but the gap between them is growing in that college education rates in suburbs are growing at a much faster rate. And as the parties change along those lines, that's a big reason why rural America has trended more Republican and suburban America has become more friendly to Democrats.
Beth, jump in here.
Yeah, and I think Johnson County especially is also getting younger. You see some demographic turnover in a number of the cities that border Kansas City. So Mission, Roland Park, obviously Prairie Village. And that turnover is going to create some interesting, ability for the Democrats to appeal to voters in Johnson County that they haven't been able to in the past.
So we were talking about, Beth, you were talking about the women voters. Women,
right.
Is
women.
Your single word about what we should be talking about. And those predictions that a lot would ride on how suburban voters turned out, it seems like that is maybe bearing out. But the prediction was specifically, in many cases, about suburban women.
Right. And I think you see some of that. But I think the urban women also, you know, the gap is even larger sort of in the urban core than it is in suburbia in terms of the gender gap. But yeah, you definitely are seeing that gap show up. It's also not just a question of how women are voting, but if you look at exit poll data, women turned out at a 6% higher rate than men, which if they're going on the Democratic side, that bodes well for the Democratic Party.
Though in Missouri,
right,
our results do not show a big blue wave as they do in Kansas.
Right. But I think Missouri and, you know, a place like Indiana, I think these are corrections for a misalignment that existed previously. So you have two states. I pick on Indiana and Missouri because they're close, but also because they're states that Donald Trump won. He won by a decent margin in Missouri, 20 points. And, you know, you had Democratic representatives who were now facing Republican electorates. And I think it's just a matter of a realignment. So I would not see those wins as any sort of red wave, so to speak.
You know, but it is interesting if you look at the numbers in Kansas, in Missouri versus Texas, a Republican won by a higher margin in Missouri,
right,
than in Texas, which is surprising to a lot of people, I think. Is the question that is Missouri redder than Texas, or is it something else?
I think it is and it isn't. So Texas is increasingly becoming more diverse demographically. And as Latinos become a larger percentage of the population in Texas, we're going to see greater shifts. And as Latinos vote at higher rates than they have in the past, Texas will become pinker and then eventually purple and potentially blue. And Missouri doesn't have the same demographic shifts that we're seeing in some of those southwestern states.
Mm-hmm. Let's start talking to some of our callers. And I've got more questions of my own, but I guess we'll hear what other people want to talk about at 816-235-2888. We're going to start with Lee in Overland Park. Hi, Lee.
Hey there.
What do you want to share?
Well, I just wanted to share that I went to the polls yesterday and voted, and my daughter, my 18-year-old daughter, voted for the first time, and she was super excited about going. I couldn't get home fast enough, and grabbed her ID, and off we went. And we talked a lot before, you know, we ever went. We talked a lot about the candidates and about the issues, and I was just super proud of her interest. I was energized by her energy and excitement, and we celebrated this morning, and it was really great, and I hope more young people are like her and will get out there and exercise their right and, you know, really take control of their future.
Well, thanks,
Lee.
Because
I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah.
So, you know, about young voters, we did this whole series here on Central Standard about first-time voters leading up to the election, different kind of reasons for being first-time voters, and young people were a huge chunk of that. The issues that when we spoke with that group of people that did seem to be really motivating them again and again were issues relating to education and issues relating to gun control and campus safety, and particularly in Kansas, conceal carry on campus. Patrick, what is your sense of how big of a deal those issues actually turned out to be in yesterday's elections?
For young voters in particular?
For young voters in particular. But yeah, did it, and then question being, did it make a difference?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think if we're looking at Kansas, for example, I think Chris Kobach was largely the issue, and how that manifested in things like school funding, maybe guns. People have different ways of expressing the issues that matter to them, often as a way of rationalizing their vote choice. I mean, I will say with young voters, I mean, anecdotally, 4 years ago when I taught my campaigns and elections class, less than half of the class voted. 2 years ago, only about half. Yesterday, to a person, they all said they voted. So I'm proud of their greater engagement, just anecdotally. But, you know, young people are different than older people, obviously. They are more liberal. They are more friendly to Democrats. They're also demographically different. Only about half of Americans under 30 are white, whereas for senior citizens, it's about 75%. So it's a different mix that prioritizes different issues for them and is pushing them in a different direction. And if Democrats are angry and are going to vote more, that means just by default, young people are angrier and are going to vote more. So I think there's a lot happening there.
We have a super interesting question from Laura in Prairie Village, and I want to give her a chance to ask this. Laura, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. So I work with school districts across the state, and I actually travel to them. And over the past few years, I've noticed that towns like Iola and Chanute and other small towns, they're dying. The hospitals are moving away. Even the Walmarts are moving away, and they're becoming these deserts. And I wondered if that played a role in the state going purple.
Interesting. So just the changes to geographically what areas are thriving, where population is clustered, that there are changes in Kansas in particular, but really all over the country, all over the Midwest for sure, that we talk about, but we don't necessarily talk about in relation to electoral habits and election outcomes.
You know, if we look at rural America, I mean, in rural America, depends on where you are, it is shrinking in terms of population. It's also changing demographically, getting more diverse. But, you know, rural-urban is often really a it's something that lays on top of other demographics that are really actually more important, like education, like religion and religiosity and race in determining how people vote. And it makes the map look different when oftentimes it really doesn't have a lot to do with where you live. In Kansas, at least yesterday, if we look at rural Kansas, it was pretty static as compared to 4 years ago. Turnout was not dramatically up or down in most places. And if you look at the Kelly Kobach numbers, they weren't that different from the Brownback Davis numbers. I think the real story in Kansas, I mean, in most places they weren't that different. I think the real story in Kansas is urban to suburban Kansas. That's really what came across as acting differently to me.
Beth, what do you think about Missouri in this respect?
Well, I think, you know, Laura's point about sort of this dying of rural America is an important point, especially when we're talking about young voters, because I do think one of the things we're seeing, and I've heard these complaints from farmers, especially throughout the country, that young people just don't want to farm. And as a result, you're getting this sort of aging rural population that is only bringing the young people that are coming in, as Patrick pointed out, are actually newly arrived immigrants in a lot of cases. And so with very different perceptions. And so I think Kansas is becoming a kind of a rural Kansas becoming a very different beast than it used to be. But on the Missouri side, I think, you know, there's nothing clearer than the rural-urban divide in Missouri. And, you know, you can just see it. And it's not even, it's so stark because all the cities are along I-70. And so you just get this, like, blue patches along I-70. And then everything else is deep red. And
it's also in terms of how election results come in. You know, the early reporting comes from the less densely populated areas. And so in Missouri, there's this whole, like, well, it looks this way, but let's wait because all those numbers from the cities Right. We don't have them yet.
Right. And part of that is also the way election results are reported. They're reported by precinct as opposed to population. And so oftentimes you see, you know, 70% of precincts reporting, and it turns out that the 30% are all in the cities, and that's a lot of people. So, yeah, it certainly gives you room to pause. But, yeah, I always like to look at which counties have reported when you sort of want to see whether a candidate has a shot any longer.
There's something you said just a moment ago that I want to follow up on, which is that you're seeing a lot of newly naturalized citizens in a lot of rural communities in Kansas,
right,
more than in the past. We spoke as part of that first time voter series with some newly naturalized citizens who are about to vote for the first time. And to them, obviously, I think immigration policy was a big deal. Nationally, people are looking at Kansas and talking about that as a referendum on Trump's immigration policy and Trump's policies, period. But if we see last night as, you know, taking the temperature on immigration policy, we get very different pictures out of Kansas and Missouri.
Right. But I think, you know, Missouri, there wasn't a discussion, I think, as and part of that's Kobach, right, having Kobach on the Kansas side. But immigration, I think, is an important issue. And it's not just to new naturalized citizens or legal residents, but it's also an important issue to young voters. My students are most interested, you know, in immigration and obviously school funding. And I don't think that's particular about UMKC students. I think young voters are also interested in immigration and more the portrayal of immigration, the fear of immigration portrayed by the president.
Patrick?
You know, an interesting thing to me about immigration, and we have all kinds of really fascinating sociological and political science studies that have data on Ellis Island immigrants, for example, over the course of generations. It takes about three generations for an immigrant family to fully acculturate and assimilate in terms of political participation, language acquisition, you know, all kinds of things. And, you know, I look at the influx of, say, Latinos into Southwest Kansas. There's not a lot of data that they actually showed up yesterday. We didn't see a lot of shift in how that area voted. But let's come back in 20 or 25 years and see how that region has changed as the older population that is more white has passed away. The younger population is more acculturated to American norms. So I think that is a ticking demographic time bomb that's there today but just hasn't exploded yet in many ways.
Let's talk to Karen in Overland Park. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
What do you want to share?
I want to respond to something that was said earlier about women in Johnson County in the suburbs kind of moving toward the Democratic Party in order to vote. And in my case, and in a number of people I know, that's really not what happened. You know, we wanted a check on Trump, and we wanted a check on his policies. And I think it's a little bit too broad to say that now we are in the Democratic camp, because next time around, I may vote Republican. And I think what I've grown weary of is the polarization between the two parties and the way things are going. And I'm standing alone now, and I'm voting for candidates, and I really don't care what party they're in.
Well, Karen, thank you for that insight. And also, I mean, that is an interesting question, because if the Republican Party and the identity of the Republican Party starts to be really more like the party of Trump versus what the Republican Party has historically been, then what Karen's saying is a really interesting thing to think about. Just what is the Republican Party, and therefore what are the votes that you could see as a vote against it, but only as it stands right now?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, every voter is going to be different to an extent. And, you know, as social scientists, we can talk about how there is a general relationship between two things, but not everyone's going to perfectly fit into that. You know, for example, most of us are the party of our parents. I'm not. I'm an aberration, but that I don't disprove that rule generally. And if we plot party identification and voting behavior over the last 20 years, we see college-educated Americans, but particularly white women, particularly those in suburbs, getting more Democratic in their voting and party ID, just like we see rural Americans getting more Republican. So certainly one voter may be the exception. For some voters, being an independent is a stopover between changing parties. But there is a pattern happening there that has turned suburbia more purple and rural America more red.
What do you think of what happened with Orman's candidacy, given that?
Well, you know, oh boy.
maybe I should take this.
Get myself in trouble here. I mean, most independents, they don't get what polls say they will. I mean, and Mr. Orman's a great example of that. He was leading Pat Roberts by a point in 2014, then he lost by 11. That's typically what happens with independents. Part of it is that people who say they're going to vote independent in polls are disproportionately likely not to actually vote. But then some of their voters come back to the major parties. So Mr. Orman was polling between 8 to 12% in the polls. He seemed to track down a little bit at the end. He ended up with 6%. So he underperformed. It's still within the margin of error. But one thing we know about his voters is that he drew disproportionately from Laura Kelly. And that was evident in the data in both public and private polling. And I think part of, you know, people thought if Laura Kelly wins, it would be by a point or two. And I think the margin of her win surprised me. And, you know, part of that's turnout. Part of it is late breaking undecideds. But also part of it, I think, has to be Orman voters coming back to Laura Kelly.
So shortly, we are going to be going to NPR's live coverage of a press conference in Washington. President Trump is set to address the nation this morning at about 10:30. So let's get a few more thoughts about local election results before we have to say goodbye. The Charisse Davids victory seems to me to be about more than red versus blue. She's the first openly gay representative in Kansas history. She's also Native American. Meanwhile, Brandon Woodward just last night became the first openly gay person to be elected to the Kansas legislature. Talk to me about the role of identity in this election for voters and for candidates.
Sure. I think it's been critical. This is probably the year of the firsts. You have, and it's not just locally, nationally, there's a number of candidates who are the first of whatever particular identity we're talking about. And I think that's really important to voters to have people who resemble them, who can advocate on their behalf when they get into Washington or in the state legislatures. And I think Charisse Davids really represents that. But I also think she represents really a pushback against Trump and the Trump administration. And I don't think Yoder did enough to distinguish himself from the Trump administration and the sort of argument that he would simply be another vote for Trump. And I think that was a mistake on his part, clearly.
You know, last night, Ann Coulter said that on Twitter that Kansas was dead to her. And that to me is a very interesting statement.
Oh, bless her heart. she's got to do her. you know, but I would say to follow up on Beth's, I mean,
but
excellent
what
point.
What do we mean for Kansas to be dead to Ann Coulter? I mean, to paraphrase Mark Twain or whoever, are the reports of the death of Kansas from that perspective exaggerated, perhaps, or
yes.
Yes. I mean, Kansas is not a purple state, no. Folks. Kansas is still a Republican state. Democrats can win, but it's not blue. It's not purple. But you know,
this is not the first time Kansas has had a Democratic governor.
No. And when Kansas elects Democratic governors, it's typically in the midterm of a Republican president. 2002, 1990s, there was a trend. But I would also say, to follow up on Beth's point, that I think one interesting thing about identity is how 20 years ago, maybe, a lot of identities were liabilities. Being a Native American lesbian in the 1990s probably was a non-starter to getting elected to anything.
Especially from Kansas.
Yeah. And it didn't matter yesterday. And I think that's where we're going with a lot of these demographics. Sure, there are some people here and there. You know, we might look at Florida, Georgia, their gubernatorial races. Race might have played a role. But for Charisse Davids, it didn't kill her. It didn't hurt her.
You know, we've been talking a lot about Kansas. We have someone emailing us with questions about the outcomes in Missouri. Michael emails us, "I'm a bit confused by the results in Missouri." So this is what he says. "In the past two elections this year in Missouri, voters have overwhelmingly supported very progressive policies at the ballot box, rejected right to work, supported an increase in the minimum wage, supported campaign finance reforms, supported fair districting, and supported medical marijuana. Yet at the same time, they elect politicians who overwhelmingly reject these policies. Can the panel provide some insight into why this might be?"
Sure. I think this is something I talked to my students about the other day, is that I think we sometimes make the assessment that the public's going to have really consistent ideological preferences and that they're going to be perfectly left and right. And that's just simply not true. And I think you're seeing that with the ballot propositions versus the candidate votes, that they're not lining up, but they're not lining up because people are evaluating them differently. So what's driving their vote for the Senate is not what's driving their vote on those ballot propositions.
And can you tease that out a little bit
more? Yes. So, for example, if we take the Senate race, there's nothing to do with medical marijuana to do with that particular Senate race. There's nothing to do really with taxes even at that point.
No one was running on that platform.
No, and it's, you know, and our minimum wage or anything like that, you know, it was about healthcare. It was about Trump, a little bit about immigration, and about Judge Kavanaugh. And I think those issues are really, inspire a lot of this polarized thinking among voters, whereas the ballot propositions are more about pocketbook issues, which I think, surprisingly, Trump did not talk about much with regard to the economy. And a lot of these issues are issues that people can see them resonating in their everyday lives versus some of the more polarizing values or gut level issues.
When we talk about turnout, it is sort of interesting to me also whether everyone who turned out necessarily voted on everything on the ballot. And so, like, a passionate desire to turn out and vote for a big name candidate on a party ticket might not correlate to, say, in Missouri, a position on a gas tax having repercussions for infrastructure.
Right. Yeah, we certainly have roll-off. That's a pretty common phenomenon in elections. And it's even more common when you have complicated ballot propositions. And I think we see that. Although I would say that I think most voters were a little more savvy than people gave them credit for. We had three medical marijuana propositions with very different implications, and voters didn't approve all three. We had a lot of discussion about what would happen if all three were approved. But instead, voters went with, I think, the more common sense amendment that was on the ballot. And I think that was sort of the nature of voters.
We're going to have to leave it there. Beth Vonnemy, Patrick Miller, thanks for being here.
Thank you.